everyone, and welcome back to the Esports Roundtable podcast, where we discuss the past, present, and future of all things business and esports. Today, we are sizing up one of the most significant issues and obstacles in the esports industry, which is brand engagement. How do we bring these in? What are non-endemics, expectations of the space, and how can they add value in the industry? We've seen some awesome activations with the likes of T-Mobile and Cloud9 and Riot Games over this World Series, as well as Audi with Astralis, both with slightly different aims for what those partnerships will bring. But we're a long way away from maximizing the commercial value in the industry as a whole. For this episode, I'm joined by the man himself, Imari Oliver, the former VP of Sales and Global Partnerships for Esports at WME IMG. Imari is now the founder and CEO of his own organization, which is Bond & Play, a collaborative esports and gaming enterprise based out of the US. Imari, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
I know that we've spoken a few times at ESL1 and in the weeks that have followed afterwards, and we've been looking at, you know, the amount of investment that's flowing into the space. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? And kind of looking towards the future of when are we going to see that first $100 million investment in the industry next year. But before we get started into the nitty-gritty on the business side, it would be great to hear your story about how you got to where you are today, the organizations that you worked with in the past, and your personal story as a consumer of all things gaming content.
Yeah. Well, cool. Let's start with, you know, my background. I started off in advertising and marketing side of the business, primarily working with agencies for the past, you know, over 15 years now. And in that role, you know, I started off as a producer. So typically what that consisted of is just execution. It's about delivery. Producing, whether it was, you know, websites, whether it was mobile campaigns, whether it was TV commercials, you name it. If you think of anything that you do in the world of advertising or marketing, that was my job, was to deliver those sorts of engagements. So early on, you know, as when social became popular, I was one of the first ones to get involved with that and develop campaigns for, you know, Facebook and those sorts of things. So that literally led me to, as you know, on one side of the house, being able to produce and deliver, and then eventually moved over to the strategy and planning side of the business. So at one point, I used to lead innovation for McGarry Bowen, which is a global ad agency. And then went over to Sparks and Honey, where I was a creative strategist. And my role there was to identify white spaces or opportunities for brands to get involved in as they start thinking about what's coming next. Because, the industry, especially from a media perspective, was in the throes of disruption, you know, especially when people talk about cord cutters, cord nevers. You saw what happened to the music industry and all of those things. So there are these trends that are shifting how brands in particular do business going forward. And my role was to get in front of those trends and then raise them as opportunities for brands.
Awesome.
And that's what actually got me into esports. So to talk about my gaming background, you know, I've been a lifelong gamer early on before it even became what it is today. You know, and I'll date myself here, but I used to be one of the guys that would be in the arcades before we had the LAN type parties, but, you know, all the standalone games that were in the arcades, and I would, you know, literally play for hours, on end. And so this was, you know, when I look back on it, this is kind of a natural progression. I used to do rights management with sports and work with some of my counterparts at Dentsu, as they were doing some of the rights management, particularly around baseball. So, it, when you start looking at it all in totality, it led me to this space. And then about 3-4 years ago, esports really came on my radar. And being, you know, on Madison Avenue, one of the things I realized that brands in particular, non-endemics, had no idea that esports, you know, even existed. Yeah. You know, they were totally unaware that there was an industry like this. And most of them didn't even believe it, that there was an industry like this where people were actually watching people play, you know, video games competitively and professionally. So early on, I wanted to be the person that introduced esports to Madison Avenue in a very concise and methodical way. So one of the first things I did was I published a report on SlideShare about, you know, the biggest sport no one ever heard of.
Sure.
And I think that report really jump-started, at least from the brand side, what was happening in the world of esports. And even on the, you know, the endemic side, there was not really a piece, a thought leadership piece, looking at the entire industry and dissecting it and making sense of it for anyone. So it was a presentation in the deck that I shared with teams as well as organizations in esports. And then working very closely with Craig Levine from ESL, who I consider my godfather of esports. you know, and I tell him that all the time, and he really took me under his wing at, you know, early on, and really helped me think about esports and the opportunities as well as make the introductions in the space. So that was really my story of getting in esports, and then it accelerated, you know, much more rapidly at the space it was moving. Working with Turner when we developed E-League, you know, working with the teams, helping the teams think about branding, because that was one of the things that was really missing. If you were to line up the top, you know, esports teams or the top players, and you just, you know, walk them down any street in America or arguably anywhere in the world, most people wouldn't know who they are.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That was a challenge as well as an opportunity to help them begin thinking about, if you're going to really connect with brands, the first thing is they have to know who you are. So that's what one of my roles was to help the teams think about how do they develop a brand. And an example of that is if you think about, you know, looking at the basketball construct, when you think LA Lakers, you think, you know, Showtime. When you think about even today, Detroit Pistons, they're still the Bad Boys. You know, Dallas Cowboys, America's team. So there are these things that stand the test of time. And I think going forward, if esports teams want to really garner the dollars that, you know, everyone's predicting, part of the first thing is they really have to develop a unique, a brand ID or a brand DNA so people really understand what they stand for.
Yeah, I mean, that idea is pretty consistent across all sporting and entertainment verticals, really. Like, you know, the mm-hmm. narrative and an exceptional narrative is really something that will elevate an entire event to the next level. I mean, we can see that across boxing with the Mayweather and McGregor fight itself. Mm-hmm. We can also see that in esports with the unique positioning of what G2 esports have been doing as well. So 100% agree with you on that. It's a really fascinating journey, and I feel like we are rushing towards another one of those key turning points for brands, which is when the baby boomers will stop actually becoming a commercially significant part of the market. And that's not a particularly nice way of saying it, but the core homeowners and those that will actually be spending in the market are going to be operating in a completely different way than the major demographics have been doing in the past. So it's a really interesting time to be in an emerging market where there's so much change and there's so much impact that those operating in a space can actually have. So let's take a step towards the business side of esports and actually outline how teams already work with brands in and outside of the space, and your thoughts around how well esports teams actually understand what brands' expectations are and how dangerous it is for these organizations to burn the hand that feeds them by not actually being able to follow through on these promises that quite a few esports organizations have made in the past.
Yeah, that's going to always be, I think, a big challenge, and you hit it on the head. So there's two pieces, you know, if I break that apart into two pieces. The first thing is, you know, brands want, you know, anyone that brands work with, they want them to be a safe pair of hands for their brand. So you're basically turning your brand over to an entity and you're asking them to protect the integrity of the brand through their work, right? So it's through their work, it's through their actions, all of those things. So the first thing is, coming in as a professional. So, and working with a variety of teams, one of my recommendations is if you're considering working with a particular brand, the first thing you need to understand is what they do as a business. And a lot of times, just because what you may see on TV or through a commercial may not be all that a brand does, right? Every year, a brand has certain goals that they need to make, whether it's, increasing spend, whether it's awareness, whether it's engagement, whether it's consideration. There are all those things that brands need to prove in order for, them to be successful at the end of the day. So, one of the first things is understand the business that they're in. If AT&T is now an entertainment company rather than a telecom, then understand how you can offer that value. If one, let's, make it up, if Pepsi is now doing more on the breakfast side or the nuts and seeds sides of the business as opposed to the beverage company, then you should know that. So when you're talking to brands, you should be familiar with their industry and where they're going. The second piece, which is, on the other side of it, is professionalism. I would say, not the fault of a lot of the teams that they don't have the experience working with brands directly, and brands expect you to be a professional, whether you're on site for a video shoot, whether you're doing some sort of campaign for them. They expect that professionalism, and they expect them, whether it's the management or the players, to share a broader vision of what this opportunity is. I think sometimes we in esports and some of the teams, we get in our own way as we work with brands because we want to be so pure as to what we think esports is, even though esports right now is evolving into all these other things. We have to be conscious. If you want a partner to work with, then you have to also be a good partner on that end, as well as help them think about how they can create the most value for their brand and for the, the consumers or the fans or the gamers or whoever they're trying to reach.
Mm. Well, it's actually really interesting that you mentioned both of those points. As I mentioned already to you before the recording, I was lucky enough to attend the Leaders in Sports Week that was hosted at Stamford Bridge in London this week, where all of the major European sports teams, leagues and agencies actually come together and they exchange ideas. There's thought leadership pieces through some panel discussions. And esports actually had a massive presence there this year. So one whole day was esports live. So there were bits about brands. There was bits about actually understanding what esports is. The legislative side of is this a safe space to operate in? And then on the Wednesday the 4th, there was a really interesting panel between Noah Winston, Dan Fiden from Cloud9, and Sundance DiGiovanni from Activision Blizzard. And there were two really big pieces of feedback that actually came out from that panel, from when I was speaking to a few football teams and some other contacts of mine that I've been with the UFC and are working with Oprah at the moment, was that one, so many, there are two significant football teams that have already said, we're not going to do esports at all. One of those is Man United, which is probably one of the most lucrative sporting teams globally. And they just will not touch esports because it doesn't add anything to their bottom line. They already have a truly global presence and this is too much risk involved. And then listening to those guys speak on stage was inspiring, as someone who works inside the industry and understands these personalities already. It was really good to see the back and forth between Cloud9 and Immortals themselves. But the feedback from quite a few conversations afterwards from some of the older guys that have been in sport and entertainment for ages was that they were really turned off by these guys talking about, even if it is fact that esports, in terms of the way that actually engages with their fans, will be a more lucrative and will have more long-term value than how sport is currently operating. This is no investment or buy-in in actually getting younger fans to follow a sports team outside of, you know, your dad follows them or your mum follows them. Mm-hmm. So those two points actually rung really clear for me this week. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting that you touch on those two specifically. Let's not just paint a picture that is all doom and gloom, though. Obviously, there's a lot of work to be done on either side. But mm-hmm. what does esports do well that brands and non-endemic organizations and industries as a whole, what can they learn from how esports actually engages with its fan base and what they're doing differently?
Yeah. And just to be clear, you know, it's definitely not doom and gloom, but I think there's lessons to be learned as this industry is maturing.
Absolutely.
And as it's growing, you know, you can just turn to, you know, just like the traditional stick and ball leagues. You know, this thing is going to be relationship based. It's going to be, like I said, a safe pair of hands for the brands. The brands, first and foremost, and similar to your point, Man United, they care about how they're represented in the industry, period. So they, you know, and they're risk adverse. So understanding that is crucial mm-hmm. as you think about how do we engage with them in a meaningful and purposeful way. Now, what I think, you know, and there's a lot that esports does very, very well. So, for example, the tournaments, you know, some of the tournaments, I was just recently, you know, at ESL1, at the Barclay.
Sure.
And I was at, last year I saw the event at Madison Square Garden. And one thing that I noticed about ESL1, which was different, and maybe I didn't pay attention before, but I saw more families attending the event. So I saw a lot of people with their, you know, their dads, their moms, sisters. It was like the whole, it was like a family event.
And yeah, that was the first time
that I really know. And I try to pay attention to all of that, but I've never seen the volume of parents there. So much so that I asked one parent, you know, why are you here? And, you know, they say, well, I want to understand what has captured the imagination of my child. Now, you know, there were a lot of older people there as well. I would say the range is anywhere from 18 to 34. But when you see so many adults there, you know, just with their children or their teen, you know, sons or daughters, you start to wonder, is this the beginning of a shift? And now that esports is more becoming more family oriented and more family friendly. And so does that create an opportunity to create programming that is suitable for the family? Because CSGO, it may not be, you know, is a red blood sport, but that didn't stop the parents from participating and taking pictures and doing all of the things that go along with it. So I found that fascinating. I also think that, you know, from a brand's perspective, brands are really missing out on a truly dedicated audience. Like, you know, think about this. ESL, 1, 2 days, 8 hours a day, or, you know, and you have this dedicated audience. They're not looking at their mobile devices. I mean, everyone is very, you know, they're on the screen.
Super focused. Yeah. Yeah.
Super focused. If you put your head down for a minute, you could just miss so much. And, what I found very interesting is that they're extremely helpful in explaining the game to others around them. And I saw a few people in the audience actually explaining things to other people in the audience who may not be as experienced in the game. So I think, you know, for brands, you know, really need to experience live events and really understand this audience, which is, you know, part of it is, I think, our fault as an industry, because that's not the story that we're telling. Yeah. You know, we're kind of telling the high level numbers, but we're not doing the fan segmentation that brands need. We're not doing the audience breakdown that they need. We're not really explaining what do they do outside of gaming. What are they eating? What are they consuming? What are they watching? So that's the story that we need to do better at, because I think, you know, and I talk to brands all the time and meet with them and kind of listen to what their concerns are and what they need. And I think a lot of them, more than we think, are on the edge of getting involved with esports. I just think some of the things is we have to do a better with the data that we're, you know, that we have and that we can share with them.
Sure. And I 100% agree with both the points that you've just put forward. Although I do think there's one really, really key thing that you've missed out there, which is probably taken for granted as one of the key commercial pillars of the industry. And that's just the intimacy of the content at home as well as in the arena. You know, you have super engaged audiences at home that will have a much stronger personal connection with influencers and pro players. And even the pro players themselves will train for 8 to 10 hours a day, and then most of them will hop on Twitch straight away. So there is a much more personal touch point for brands to actually engage with. So it's not just pre-roll, it's the opportunity for brands to partner with those that actually use their products and actually really believe in them, but also can make some extra content around these products that will be very easy to understand and will be pitched at their audience just because they know them so well. So I feel like esports as a whole and the online scene of industry going through influencers and that sort of thing is one area of the market that not so many organizations and industries are very good at doing.
Yeah, totally agree. You know, I think the unique position that, you know, the esports teams and management have is that they have a clear understanding of, you know, of their fan base and of their audience. And I think that is a key differentiator than, you know, other leagues and the connection. I think there's a level of closeness, right? Because, you know, think about Twitch. You have content, conversation, and commerce happening in the same place, right? So now you can't, you know, go and ask LeBron to take that jump shot again. But if you're watching, you know, your favorite gamer on Twitch, you could say, you know, explain why you did that or, you know, do that again or what have you. So I think there's that, which is a next level of engagement, which is extremely intriguing for brands. But again, brands want that on scale, right? So you have to be able to tell that story in terms of how can you deliver that experience on scale. The second thing I think that the teams and, you know, anyone that's part of that ecosystem is really think about, you know, the inventory, whether it's media inventory, whether it's sponsorship, whether it's ads, you know, think about, can we be in content? Can we be even more creative in developing uniquely ownable territories for brands to participate in and own based on what we do? And that's one of the things that, you know, I'm looking to do quite a bit as I'm working with teams in particular, is helping them think about what are some of the things that they can create specifically for a brand. So, you know, you pick a brand, but they want to feel that not anyone else can just come in and do that sort of thing. So part of it is also understanding what's the inventory that you're selling and that you're presenting. Because most brands now that I'm talking to, they're not totally interested in just doing sponsorship deals. They want to do things that are much more meaningful, much more purposeful, much more engaging, that they can actually touch, you know, their fans and their consumers in a different way. So I think there's an opportunity there to now create some really cool things that brands can really get behind and be excited about.
Sure. And there's a really great example of that with the Cloud9 T-Mobile a partnership where, you know, they switched over the style of their merchandising for a limited time, and that worked really well. And we're actually seeing that kind of merchandising experimentation come through quite a lot of the North American brands where they're doing kind of world champion specific goods and services and that sort of thing. But obviously that's not a unique activation. You know, any brand could go to any team, and so I mean, I'm not going to sit here and do some guesswork around what these unique ideas may actually be. But as these organizations, as these esports teams start to actually position themselves, mm-hmm. not as part of a mass ecosystem, but, you know, Immortals and a Cloud9 and a G2 and SKT all having a unique audience that engages in a certain way based on how their brand is positioned will give more transparency and understanding for those brands who are actually looking to step into the space. You know, for example, I could see a Snickers sponsorship with G2 because there's a very like strong kind of blustery, macho kind of. Mm-hmm. Everyone versus us, like you can see the potential correlations there. So it's super, super interesting. So we've seen a few brands step into the space with very different aims. So if you look at the BMW, Mercedes and Audi engagements with Astralis and Riot and ESL, obviously these are very long-term partnerships. They're not going to be necessarily aligned with the KPIs that are sales specific in the short term. This is a way of actually getting in front of a young audience that in 5 to 10 years or even sooner might be at the age where they're actually going to be making those purchases. And there's so much information out there that a natural affinity towards one brand or another makes a massive difference. Whereas if you look at, say, the telco brands that they're getting in, that's obviously a lot more short term, and there's a lot more to activate on there. So the timeline of brands acceleration into actually stepping into the esports industry, what are the kind of the gaps in the market that you're expecting new players to step into over the next 12 to 18 months where we haven't seen any activity so far? Not that you want to give away your your game plan for the next year, obviously.
You know, it's funny. I mean, you know, I think you started seeing, you know, of course, the telecoms get in. You know, you talked about the T-Mobile. I think you'll see some of the others get in. I think you're going to see some of the bigger entertainment networks begin to get into space because they're seeing now, you know, they have experience, whether if you have experience putting on concerts or, you know, big major events, are there other things that they can bring to the table that may not be readily available in some of these other esports types of live events that you're seeing. I think the media is going to continue to, you know, grow, especially, you know, even on Over the Top, you'll see some dedicated esports media type apps. You'll see, of course, I don't see it going anywhere from ESPN or TBS or even ABC. So, you know, those are some of the major networks mm-hmm. over here in the States. I think you'll continue to see that grow. But, I think that's where the creativity part comes in. You know, for every brand, you know, for every team, it should be less about the shotgun approach and more about a very focused approach saying, you know, you gave a good example of G2 and Snicker. Saying here are our brand attributes and here are the categories or the brands that better align with who we are. Mm-hmm. And I think and if you approach it that way, you'll probably be able to tell your story much better and have more success because now you're a focused brand and you know what your strengths and you know what your attributes are. Sure. So I think that is a good point to make for the brand because sometimes teams just want to get whoever they can get, you know, a deal with. And yeah. I think there's something to say about specializing and being focused around who you're going after. But I'm a firm believer that, you know, almost any brand can find a very interesting way to play. I'm very interested in seeing some of the CPG guys really open up, you know, look at their products in a different way as they're beginning, you know, and thinking about, well, in CPG consumer product, you know, consumer packaged goods, and that's like the P&Gs, Unilevers, and all those guys. But going beyond, you know, the obvious, but also seeing are there new products that we can launch that we can then leverage this audience? Because I think this audience is one that's very receptive if you actually create things for them as well. You know, everyone knows this is extremely passionate audience. They can talk, eat, sleep, breathe, you know, esports all day. And I think for brands to really, really understand, you know, what's happening, are they going to go the way of the dodo bird? I mean, if you're trying to grow in North America or anywhere in the world, there's no way that you can not do something with, you know, esports or just amateur gaming or even casual gaming in a meaningful way. I mean, there's 2.6 billion, you know, gamers around the world. Everyone plays video games. And at this point, it's becoming so much more. Even when you watch it on television, you know, you can spend 2-3 hours just watching it and not even realizing that you're watching a video game.
Yeah, exactly. Because,
you know, and every game is different. You're never going to see the same game twice. I mean, every round, every match is different. And I think there's some excitement there that, you know, as I'm watching it as a fan, it just makes sense. And I think as more brands begin to watch it and experience it, you know, online, I'm a fan of bringing them to live events because once they see it, it literally greased the wheels in terms of, oh, we need to do something with this space. So I think in 2018, you're going to see a lot more brands and a lot of it is driven, by, you know, the NBA with their esports league. A lot of it will be driven with Overwatch and the announcement of that League of Legends now is having, you know, a lot of people, more people are talking about it before, you know, as they're buying franchising, they're reading the news. You know, you have PUBG, which is I'm a huge fan of, and I love telling that story of you know, where it started from and where it's at now and how it's capturing the imagination of millions of people around the world as, you know, watchers as well as, you know, players, you know, and they're having at the Intel Extreme Masters, they're going to have the PUBG Invitational, which is exciting. So I think, you know, and there's so many other games that are just coming out. Like everyone's trying to position their title as a esports title. And it just shows the evolution of competitive digital entertainment.
Yeah. After the first day at Leaders on the Tuesday this week, I was sat down with a few of my friends from the industry, and we were speaking about the state of Counter-Strike, and we were like, how can you make that game that is already, which in so many ways ticks the right boxes for a brand friendly a title in terms of the actual, like, the pace of the game, the simplicity of it, but how can you make a Counter-Strike actually brand friendly and actually still make it fun? Because we were basically saying it has to be like Splatoon, or it's got like a bunch of clowns that have to go and like plant a cake somewhere. And the main reason why I said that is because there are a next wave of esports titles that will be coming through that will have this in the back of their mind, that will be able to cater for endemic interests and also for what the fans want. We've kind of seen that slightly recently with the PUBG competitor Fortnite by Epic Games. It's a lot more cartoony. There's less blood. There's a building element as well. And it's a very, very similar product, actually. So similar that they use the same engine as PUBG, and there's actually some legal issues going back between between the two entities. So really interesting to see the context in which brands will actually be able to come to the table. Unfortunately, MRE, we've actually hit time limit for this episode, but I've got one more question for you.
Yes.
It's our lovely recurring a question around what you would be in the esports industry if you weren't in your role right now. And this week we're calling it the Sands of Time. So if you could flick around the Sands of Time, any pro-facing role in any esport title, past, present, fantasy or future, it can be one of the games from the arcade, you can be a mascot, you can be a pro player, what would you be and why?
Well, there's one. I would love at some point to be an analyst and a host for a title.
Okay.
You know, I think I can, you know, bring an interesting version of storytelling. Storytelling is so important, and what I like to do is tell stories, and, you know, in a very fun and engaging and in a culturally relevant way, right?
Sure.
And I think there's so many things that you could take that happened in culture using pop culture references to make the story even more engaging. And, you know, as when I was watching you know, it's like there's this thing called science fiction theater. What was it? Science fiction theater, where there were these two characters that sit in the theater and they just critique, you know, the film and that sort of thing. So being able to have fun and be a fun analyst and play off of each other, I think if I had to do something for free and money wasn't an object and I could just play, I would love to be very playful at one of those as being a host of an analyst. I definitely wouldn't play it straight, you see some of the games, but it would be more clever, more fun, something that you would have to think about later on. It would think about the Dave Chappelle of if you had
very lofty aims right there. But you can't just say you want to be an analyst. You've got to give me a title, man. Like, you've got to give me a game from your childhood or a game these days. You can't. I'm not going to let you get off scot-free with that.
So I would probably, right now, based on what's out, that I would like to be an analyst for Rocket League. I just think it's just so much fun. And it fits my inner 8-year-old who loves to just get out and play and explore. And then just PUBG. I just love, it's like the Hunger Games. It's like there's just so much you could talk about. It is this big story, and you could amplify, you know, characters and personalities, you know, and there's just so much content to work with. So those are the two that I would really like to, if I can, you know, start tomorrow, I would do that, jump on stage and just go for it and just have a great time with it.
So, awesome. There you go. That's a solid answer. I mean, I would love to see you on the desk for a PUBG, as long as the production actually have enough observers to make the actual content interesting.
I'll make it interesting, trust me.
Yeah, but you're not going to be able to work all of the observer panels at the same time to actually make sure you're looking at the right thing at the right time. It's still a super good answer. Thank you very much for hopping on the roundtable with us. I think it's a really interesting and relevant key issue for the industry as a whole to move through. I think it's going to be one of the main limiting or augmenting factors in the industry, is if this distance between organization inside the space and brands can actually be reduced. So I really appreciate your time. Where can everyone find you if they'd like to get in touch?
Yeah, they could just reach me at, there's two places, you know, always follow me on Twitter and you could DM me. So it's at Imari, I-M-A-R-I, Oliver, O-L-I-V-E-R, and that's on Twitter. And then if you want to email me, it's Imari, I-M-A-R-I, dot Oliver, at bondandplay, B-O-N-D-A-N-D-P-L-A-Y, .com.
Fantastic. Well, guys, I appreciate everyone tuning in for this episode. We have the lead from Nielsen's esports practice, Nicole Pike, will be hopping on in the next few weeks. Their industry report went live this week, and there'll actually be a link to that in the description for this episode. If you're looking for a one-stop shop for information and insight that might be more brand friendly, I recommend that you head over there and have a little look. All right, guys, I will speak to you soon. All the best.